Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler, but I don't even know what my name is. I'm Tyler Bishop, and alongside me is Whitney Wright. At least I got your name right.
Oh my god.
Dude, it's going to be a long day, Whitney.
You're done talking for the rest of the podcast.
I'd say let's start over, but you know what? I'm going to leave it in, you know?
Let's just trudge through.
You guys deserve to know the real me, and the real me, I have typos when I talk. That's how you know it's really me. I'm not AI yet.
Not yet, anyway.
Artificially generated.
You have tried.
But honestly, you know what? Today, I'm making the case pretty strong for, like, you know what? He could be replaced. We could make him better.
Make him a robot.
Yeah.
Well, we were just talking about that some of the news is kind of slowing down. But it's kind of similar topics that we've talked about, but they've just
evolved
a little bit. Yes, that's a great word for it. So we're going to talk about Google CEO. They recently had a conversation with the Wall Street Journal and talking about what search will look like in the next 10 years. ChatGPT and generative AI tools are facing more legal woes, which is not surprising. And then what is the real value of Facebook to publishers? So we will just get right to it with the Google CEO. Do you know how to pronounce his last name?
Sundar Pichai.
Pichai? Okay. Well, he recently had an interview with the Wall Street Journal and said that the Google search experience will evolve substantively over the next decade. Same thing, right?
Yeah. And it's not a typo. I've seen that before, but I've never heard somebody say it.
Me either.
Substantially and
substantively.
Yeah.
Anyway, which I feel like saying that search is going to change a lot in the next 10 years. That's not a big surprise. So one of their questions was if they thought that Google search would look like Google search now or more like Bard. And he was really cryptic about the whole thing, obviously. He's like, maybe neither, maybe both. he said that search and AI will be more personalized in the future. That's about all that he could really say. And so Google will be able to impact users in a deeper, more meaningful way. He wants to bring modern LLM capabilities into search, but never specifically said that search will evolve into a conversation. So search will never be Bard and vice versa. And I think we've talked about that. It's just completely different.
And I'm always quick to point that out to people too.
Yeah.
I think in our space, especially, I think people are like, AI and search engines, they're the same thing. One is going to take the place of the other. They're very different things.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought this was kind of funny. He said Bard was an example of a time when being first doesn't matter. And I feel like they're saying that because they weren't first.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're not first, like, you're last.
Yeah, you know? I know.
Right? No, it's one of those things where it's like the point of not being first is to, like, be better.
Right.
Bard, like, what seemed rushed and not better.
Right.
I mean, like, their demo had an error in it, which is a very slight error. It's not necessarily like this, like, it's not like Baidu's, which was, like, actually having pretty significant errors. But, like, the biggest thing is that I agree with them that that search will evolve substantively over the next 10 years. But I think a better word would be that search will become, especially in Google's, just Google in general, I think will become less and less relevant as it relates to being an integrated form of technology that we use.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about today, it's like, you want to look something up. What do people say?
Google it.
Right.
Yeah.
And, it's not that I think that people won't Google things potentially, or even use search engines anymore. It's that you're going to have this tool that offers something new. And right now all our behaviors are defined by, using a search engine as a means to an end, meaning, mm-hmm. like, we've talked about this a little bit before, but, like, if I'm trying to, if I want to buy a shirt or I want to, like, shop or something like that, I might type something into Google and then Google will triage me off to the place that I think I need to go. In fact, people will know where they need to go and still put it into Google.
Mm-hmm.
That's why brand names buy, like, their own keywords inside of, ads and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I think about a lot with search engines is that it's the wrong tool for a lot of jobs that we're doing already.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the right tool for some things. Like, sometimes, and I'm a more depth searcher than others. I like to think I know my way around a search engine pretty well. And, like, sometimes what I want is a list of websites.
Yeah.
I want to, like, peruse what's out there.
Right.
Like, I want to discover something. But when you're looking for an answer, or you're trying to figure out how to do something, or you're basically trying to, like, you want something to be produced,
mm-hmm.
you don't want, like, a website. Like if I want
hot sauce.
What'd you say?
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce. Yeah, hot sauce. If I want to buy some hot sauce or something, maybe I do want a list of websites. Actually, I want to go see like who sells hot sauce and all that kind of stuff. But if I want to try to figure out the difference between substantively and substantially, like, do I really want to go to a search engine, type the difference in to get the answer?
No.
Like, for whatever reason, I need that, like, in a conversation or in a document that I'm writing. I actually just want that to be produced there.
Right.
And using a search engine to get that's really clunky.
Actually. It is. And they've tried to kind of remedy or, like, use search engines to, like, fit this function for a while through, like, featured snippets and, like, pulling, you know, or they, if you click on a website, it'll automatically scroll you to where it's the answer is highlighted. Yeah. So they've, like, tried to adapt search for that, but that's not what it's for, and that's not its best use. And yep. So, I mean, I think.
Some of our users that are, like, long-term SEO, I guess, like, followers. I don't mm-hmm. know. Is it people that have been, like, in the world of SEO for a while? You know, like Google and this idea of personalized results or whatever, mm-hmm. like this was a really hot topic like 7-8 years ago whenever, mm-hmm. you know, Google would serve personalized results or not personalized results or regionally personalized results. And it was always this cat and mouse game of getting them to admit what they would and wouldn't do. And it became an interest of Congress and a lot of legislators mm-hmm. as well. And then they, you know, got to where they're saying, well, we're not giving everybody different results. You know, we're not an echo chamber. But you know, that seems to be allude, like they seem to allude that like AI is what they imagine now will do the personalization. I still don't think they're going to do that. I mm-hmm. think that there's legal woe precedents that they'd have to worry about. And so I honestly, based on what I've heard, especially from the CEO and the different like areas, like how rarely has Google contradicted itself so dramatically in short periods of time before?
So like this is pretty unprecedented.
They're usually so careful about what they yeah. say. And even whenever you think something looks like a contradiction or you don't believe them, if you read their language, it's like, it's kind of like the old Bill Clinton comment to Congress whenever he was being impeached. I think he said, it depends on what your definition of is. And I loved that because it's just so meta and also just, it strikes me as like the perfect tone that Google has taken over time where they're mm-hmm. like, well, it depends on what you mean on the page. And you're like, right. Stop parsing your words. Like,
yeah.
You know what we mean. So I just find that like, I don't think that anyone there really understands where they're headed. And I think for the longest time, it's everyone in that building assumed that we have a vision for AI and it's off in the distance. And now it's here. And I think they've realized like, we don't have a vision.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think last week we talked about how they're rearranging some of their employees to better
focus on AI.
So, yeah, we'll see where that goes. I guess see in 10 years and we can discuss what happened.
I mean, all of a sudden overnight, I mean, I think, you know, like the story of their demise, or what is it? The whatever of their demise is like greatly exaggerated.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's really easy to beat Google up right now because it does look like overnight they've almost become like one of the powerhouse businesses that are, you know, like that our world has been governed by in a mm-hmm. lot of ways to this company that it's like, boy, I hope they're in business in a couple of years.
Right. You know? They're going to be fine.
And I don't think it's either, but I do think that it's something that like, yeah, it's very hard to predict where things will evolve to in the next 10 years.
Well, you kind of mentioned Google with some legal woes, and we're getting back into generative AI once more and what's kind of happening in the legal world. ChatGPT and generative AI tools face legal woes worldwide. ChatGPT was recently banned in Italy. I didn't know that.
I just read an article this morning. Italy is wilding.
They
also said that they're going to ban any lab-grown food in the future. Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyways.
The EU is currently working on passing an Artificial Intelligence Act. The US is defining an AI Bill of Rights, which I did not know we were doing. Mm-hmm. The UK recommends AI regulation. Users have filed complaints globally for potential safety issues. And basically, OpenAI is very hands-off about being held legally or financially responsible if people don't follow the terms and policies. They're kind of like, you try to use ChatGPT in Italy, like, we are not responsible for what you're trying to do. Yeah. But it seems like even from last week, so I saw so many more articles about this, whereas like last week there was just like one article kind of about how these kind of legal implications are coming up because of ChatGPT. And now all of a sudden it's just like all of these nations are like, I guess, putting stuff together to.
Well, I think China set like the early precedent, and yeah. I think they were the first to maybe recognize a little bit of like, if you look at the major tech businesses that like have been relevant for most of the world, some of them don't even operate in China anymore. And the reason is because they are American businesses. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a fair amount of evidence to suggest that they play very nicely with the American government. And yeah. So if for any reason, like your national sovereignty, you feel like might be violated or like at risk, or at least compromised by, you know, allowing, you know, these very like intrusive technologies to your citizens, then I think it makes some sense why you might want to ban it. But mm-hmm. I'm sort of the mind with something like a ChatGPT or something like that, where, I mean, if you go into some place like GitHub right now, mm-hmm. If you're remotely tech savvy, there's a number of open source models that are similar. Mm-hmm. I don't know how good some of them are. I hear about Llama a lot. Okay. And other things that people are using. So ChatGPT in of itself, a ban, I don't think is as dangerous or concerning if you're a citizen of those countries as like an outright AI ban or a ban
yeah. on
usage in some cases. Now, the U.S. defining an AI Bill of Rights, I follow everything in this space, and I have not heard about that.
I clicked on the link. It's literally from the White House, so it's a real, like, it's not just something that was made up.
I mean, I did say, like, about a month ago on the podcast, like, AI is going to need its own set of laws, rules, and
they're
rights.
They're doing it. Yeah, I didn't scan the, I mean, I can't say that White House documentation is extremely riveting, so I didn't look through the entire article.
Yeah,
about
I want to find somebody at the White House and be like, hey, explain to me how it works.
Yeah, right. I know.
But the biggest thing I think with that is that we do need laws that govern this. I saw yesterday, I mentioned the Llama thing. Mm-hmm. They have, somebody has an open source model now where you can take, you can do the voice sampling and stuff. So we play with it here a little in the mm-hmm. office. You can upload clips of your own voice, and then you can type transcripts and different things like that mm-hmm. out with it. We've been building a lot of things like that that are pretty exciting. But you can actually turn it into a singing voice now, so it'll auto-tune it for you.
And
so
somebody,
yeah, me too, you don't want to hear me sing. But somebody had been doing this, and they'd been creating beats and Fruity Loops, and then they were taking artists, the ones that I saw were Machine Gun Kelly and Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
And this person had written a song,
uh-huh.
had them sing it, and then put his own beat to it. And it's like, you have a Machine Gun Kelly Snoop Dogg collab song that is produced not by either of them.
Right.
And technically it's not either of them, but it is their voice.
Yeah.
And so then the question becomes like, you know, can they sue that the person that actually made that?
Yeah.
And can they sue them for, I mean, like sampling has been around in music and that has its own sort of laws and regulations.
Yeah.
But when it's a voice and it's right. not really your voice, but if the source of the sound is actually from samples of your voice.
Where, yeah, I don't know.
And then are we going to get down to where it's like you're going to actually put a, like, you know, like the sound synthesizer where you can actually see the peaks and the troughs of uh-huh. like the sound frequency and stuff. It's like, what happens if it's just similar? You know, like,
yeah.
Is there a legal, do I have a legal right to sue somebody if their voice is similar to mine?
Right, exactly. How far does it go, really? And I think that this is super similar to that. It's being able to copy things and replicate. I mean, we've kind of already seen, like, people's art getting stolen. Like, at what point is art stolen?
Yeah.
If it's being used to create AI, like, is it taking, like, samples from it, actual samples? Is it just like getting ideas? Is it actually stealing the art? I think that it will become super interesting in this next year, AI, like, and where we're going with this.
Are we going to have generic celebrityism where somebody's like, yeah, I have this song that I wrote, it's a Snoop Dogg song, I made it, but I can't call it Snoop Dogg because I'll get sued for using his name, so I'm going to call it Slump Dogg, you know, or something like that, where it's like basically like, love, you know, Slump everybody Dogg. Knows what it is,
yeah,
but like technically they get away with it, right, you know?
Yeah,
like parody laws and stuff like that. It's yeah. going to be a wild time. And I imagine that there won't be consistency here at first. So if you're worried about one of these things, like pay attention to the court cases. And, you know, the rule on a lot of these things is if you're going to get into a kind of a sticky area, don't be the first one, because the first one is usually the guy that gets shot in the street. And you just got to figure out if you need to go down that one or a different one.
Yeah. So yeah, totally agree.
That's my advice.
Yeah, I would look into, depending on obviously where you're located, keep up with what's happening. It's I mentioned mostly the EU and the United States and then the UK, but I know, like you said, China is like, they have like their own version.
Yeah, well, they've fast-tracked in much the way that I assume things are going on at Google. They're more integrated with their tech sector, public and private businesses, but Baidu and Alibaba and Tencent, I think, are, you know, they're wrapped up in almost all the tech there in China, and Baidu seems to be the furthest along, and it seems to be improving based on what I've heard.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's happening everywhere to literally everyone. So keep tabs on that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Charlie, and I'm a technical publisher advocate here at Zoic, and I'm here to tell you about Zoic Ads. Did you know that you can maximize your website monetization using a Zoic sophisticated AI? You can cater a different ad experience to each individual user going to your site. It's true. It's called Ad Tester, and you can automatically trigger multivariate testing to run thousands of experiments at once. You choose your goals and let a Zoic optimize each unique visit around them. Publishers have seen an increase of average monthly revenue by 36%. So what are you waiting for? Sign your site up to a Zoic and join the thousands of other publishers maximizing their revenue today.
So the last one, I think I kind of talked about this in, I was doing that quarterly blog update where every 2 weeks I would update like what's happening with ad rates in the quarter. I think I mentioned something about this, just like this disconnect between publishers and Facebook and Gen Z. And so I'll get into it. So a report commissioned by Meta about Facebook reported that new news links account for less than 3% of posts people see in their feeds. So this is in a response to legislation passed in Australia in 2021, which we've talked about before, could force platforms to pay publishers for their content, which when you put it that way, crazy, pay publishers for their content.
Well, so what they were saying in this is that when a news article shows in a news feed or, and I think this applied to Google as well, or search results. So the thing that you want if you're a publisher actually is to like advertise your content, that Facebook and Google were going to have to pay for this. And it sounds great at first because you're like, yeah, pay us. But Facebook and Google kind of did a bit of a shakedown initially. And what they did is they're like, we're not paying everybody. We'll go do a deal with like the three big publishers.
Right.
We'll like, and if they don't want to do a deal, it's like you basically like, you create this very a strong asymmetry of negotiation power where you go to three major publishers and you go, hey, we'll pay you to show your news in our feed, but we're only paying you. And they go, well, we want you to pay us a little bit more. And they're like, cool. Hey, three other publishers, you know, and eventually somebody does it, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and Facebook has already tried to distance itself from news content by changing the algorithm. They've gotten a lot of heat, obviously, I remember all the news situation going on with like the election and stuff. So they already are kind of phasing out news and publishing on Facebook. They stopped paying U.S. publishers to use their content in its Facebook news tab and dropped instant articles. The report, of course, claims that there is no imbalance of power. It's estimated that publishers get about 1 to 1.5% of total revenue from Facebook referrals, but a survey, and this is what I think I talked about in the blog, was a survey of more than 100 publishers showed that Facebook still holds considerable sway in engaging young audiences, and 75% of publishers still use Facebook to reach these younger audiences. But then also the report like says that Gen Z is not on Facebook. So I don't know where...
Are they?
No, they're not. It's like, I think I didn't put this down to, I guess, talk about, but like the amount of younger people on, I don't remember the age group, younger people on Facebook between 2019 and like 2023 dropped like 40%. Like,
yeah.
You know, they're just not on there. But well, for some reason, publishers are still, that's where they're getting most of their younger people audiences. And so it's like, I don't know. There's some sort of disconnect happening here.
Is you have to try to like, you have to balance sort of like what you know with the information and exactly like what information you're getting. So this is something I've done for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's that anytime I see somebody quote stats or study, I usually go right to that citation, copy it, paste it, and go find it. And I want to read that report for itself to see what mm-hmm. it actually says. It's, mm-hmm. this is great to do if you ever are interested in looking at medical studies, because it's like, oh, wow, that seems pretty incredible. And you go read the study and you're like, oh, this was three people and it's based on a survey done in the 1800s. Okay, great.
Yeah, right.
But with the Facebook one, so in some cases when they'll like mix and match data where they'll reference like a rise in Gen Z usership, but they're including Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say, actually, 75% of, you know, people logging onto Facebook every day or between these age groups or whatever, but they're not talking about the same group they were talking about before, which right. includes Instagram. They're talking about like all Facebook accounts, which in the developing world, Facebook is actually almost like an ISP in that they're so incumbent and they've paid for a lot of the investment in infrastructure inside of certain countries, specifically in like the Middle East and Africa and parts of Asia. To where it's like, we talked about MSN, I think, in mm-hmm. the last podcast, where it's like some people still have like the default.
Yep.
Facebook is the default for like sign in whenever you access the internet in some countries. I think maybe the Philippines is this way.
Mm-hmm.
So they count those, and then they also reference like different stats that just are looking at Instagram.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's one of the things you want to be careful with whenever you're trying to maybe decide, you know, directionally where you're going as a publisher. You know, like if you were to read something like this or read new stats about like the uptake in Bing, it's really important you try to figure out exactly what it is that they're mm-hmm. talking about, because it could totally lead you astray.
Right.
They're obviously, you know, pumping these stats to, you know, woo advertisers onto their platform,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they're referencing, you know, publishers, you know, less than 3% of posts people see in their feeds are like news or links from, I mean, realistically, go hit a Facebook feed, see how many links out to a website you get.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it's not very many.
Not anymore. Yeah. And
Instagram is pretty careful about not letting you hit a link unless you pay for it.
I know. Yeah. Instagram and Facebook, I feel like, are completely different, like markets and age groups. Like I still try to explain to my mom how to use Instagram. She has one, and I was like, I sent it to you on Instagram. She's like, oh, where are my messages? And I'm like,
my dad uses Instagram.
Good for him.
He uses Instagram like no other person uses Instagram, though. Like, it would be fascinating to see just like a heat map of where he goes. It's very interesting.
Yeah. I think that really what I kind of gathered from this was that even if the stats are true that these publishers get the majority of these younger audiences on Facebook, I think that that just means that they're losing out somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, they aren't reaching them where they are. They're just, that's just happens to be the only place that they're reaching them is yeah. kind of my, understanding of like probably what's happening. Also, the data like changes so quickly. Like, I don't remember yeah. when they pulled, I don't think it was very long, maybe last year, but like it could have changed by now.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's true. And I think, you know, like they're referencing news here a lot too. And
yeah.
I think one of the things as a publisher, and this is something that like I've learned over time by being on both sides of the fence of advertising and publishing.
Mm-hmm.
But news content, like news, mm-hmm. like what did, you know, like the President of the United States say today about, you know, like the tornadoes in the Midwest or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That information is so broad, it's a commodity piece of information
yeah.
because it's public domain. Literally anybody can publish it, and it's an objective fact. And it's something that maybe theoretically any human could be interested in reading about.
Yeah.
So for that reason, the ad rates for news that is broad-based is very low. Because if you think about it, if I just wanted to run an ad that hits everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, that's pretty easy. I can just I can buy an ad wherever it's cheapest if I want to hit everybody. So, like, news content doesn't attract any one specific audience, and that's why you see somebody like a Fox News or a CNN or whoever have this sort of, like, branded news, meaning mm-hmm. it's like, when I say Fox News, those in the U.S. or those that may be familiar, it's like, there's a political tint for sure, mm-hmm. And everybody sort of knows that, but that at least defines their audience better, mm-hmm. which gives them a better, like, proposition to advertisers. So the thing about it is that when you see people talking about news or, like, paying for news in a feed or something like that, that's different than the content that most publishers that are probably listening to our show and that, mm-hmm. you know, the majority of publishers that exist are not just broad, global, regional, whatever news.
Right.
And I actually think that news in of itself may take a fork in a completely different lane than all the rest of content mm-hmm. as we move forward into the future, because AI is going to be really concerned with factual, mm-hmm. objective information on news more so than it is like how to make a popsicle stick like gingerbread house.
Yeah. Is that what you're looking up on?
It's just the first thing I thought of.
in the middle
of spring.
Yeah, right. Just really want a popsicle. Well, we do have a question from last week, and this is about Bard and Chatbox and search engine. We kind of answered this question before, but maybe you can talk about it again, especially if, you know, they weren't listening to that podcast episode. Would revenue decrease if Google's Bard chatbot is incorporated into Google search engine?
No.
No. And I think we talked about this because they don't make a bunch of money off of display.
Well, it depends on what you mean. Because if, let's say you put a chatbot into Google search right now, mm-hmm. like a chatbot does not answer, like, is it going to write you an entire article? You sit there and let a chatbot write you out an article that mm-hmm. probably not. Like, I'd still probably click a web page rather than have the AI sit there and like, all right, you start reading it and you're like, no, this isn't what I want.
Yeah.
Right? Take one time of that and you're never sitting through it again. So already articles and things like that probably don't apply to this. Now, whenever the information is maybe niche factual, meaning like it's something to where it's like you need an expert maybe to give you the answer, but maybe it's not a long answer. Mm-hmm. We're seeing this with Quora, we talked about last week, already mm-hmm. actually doing physically what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's not bad at it. But that's not going to affect advertising rates, through display. It may make the sort of search ad space a little bit more competitive because mm-hmm. you're going to have the viewability, the time that people spend on the SERP is going to be longer, which I don't know how it is now, but I know that 2 or 3 years ago, Google's goal was to get people off the search results page as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, that was their goal. It's like, the longer you spent dwelling on the search results page, like, the worse experience that was. Mm. And so, like, they actually wanted people to go to websites. So it kind of works counter to where they've directionally gone for a long time. But if you take that out of the equation, like, advertisers actually, whenever people do hit sites that are hitting the audience that is looking for that or whatever, it's like it may make the ad rates go up because it may make it more competitive, especially mm-hmm. if people getting answers from the SERP. The website would actually maybe give you a premium because now, like, if people are hitting the website, maybe it's because that information is especially unique or special or, mm-hmm. you know, something a chatbot can't provide. That said, it could affect traffic if it is mm-hmm. something that users find helpful. So I would say, like, you know, does it affect revenue? If it affects your traffic, yes.
Yeah.
But it's going to depend case by case.
Yeah.
But it may make ad rates go up in some cases.
That makes sense. Yeah. I feel like ranking is going to be, like, even harder than before.
It's just going to be a different thing because
the competition.
Yeah. It's like if you rank number one, quote, but there's a chatbot that answers 50% of the questions, it's like, you know, the same as if you were to rank, you know, maybe eighth before where you get mm-hmm. 50% less traffic compared to the number one result. Or, you know, like in some cases, maybe the chatbot gives a worse answer and being, you know, ranking number one actually is better than ranking number one when there's a knowledge graph there.
Yeah.
Google will probably figure that out. But like, you know, like open up ChatGPT in a browser next time you're using, you know, like you're browsing around the web or you're working or something like that, and just ask yourself the question of, like, whenever you go to Google something, put whatever it is you're going to Google into ChatGPT and see how many times, like, it serves the purpose that you're, you know, actually using a search engine for. Mm-hmm. I think you'll recognize that you probably use a search engine more in cases where you probably want something that's better. But I think you'll also find that ChatGPT, like, basically does not do the job of mm-hmm. a search engine in the majority of cases that you would use it for normally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I hope that answers your question. I'm not sure who posted that, but yeah, revenue is undetermined, but most likely I don't think we'll probably decrease.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's still so many variables in play. It's like you might have to eat those words eventually, but
yeah,
we'll see how things play out. User behavior is going to define so much of
right.
this. Like, I think that's the thing that people are missing is, like, you can be right about your predictions and about, like, the way that the technologies work, but, like, just because something is better or more optimal doesn't mean that's what people do.
Right.
You know, I'm of the mind that there will probably be something really stupid that's maybe not that important that will grab mass appeal, and then that mm-hmm. will define a lot of the ways that people interact with and use AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could just be, could be your passwords and stuff like that. All of a sudden, it's like your AI has all your passwords and keeps you logged into stuff, and yeah,
maybe people
that'll
love it,
define,
though.
You know, like a completely new path and open up all these different things that people hadn't thought of because nobody had thought, like, that was going to be the entry point for AI into modern user, you know, life.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Well, was there any other, I guess, like, questions that you've heard that you wanted to answer, or anything else to
touch
on?
I've got more questions than answers at this point, and I'm sure our audience is that way too, but that's why I love getting the questions. So if you have a chance, it's the Publisher Lab.
It's just publisherlab.org.
Publisherlab.org. Mm-hmm. Got to get that part right. Know my own domain. and yeah, shoot your questions in, because I think there's a lot of really interesting mm-hmm. areas of this space. Like I said, Whitney and I'm sure... have very similar, like, news feed histories and mm-hmm, stuff like that. Yeah. We're getting lots of AI news, so pretty up to date on most of the stuff and love to discuss it. So throw your questions at us.
Yeah. You can find us on any platform that you can find podcasts on. We're on YouTube. You can check us out on our YouTube channel. Give us a like, a subscribe if you prefer to, you know, watch these instead of listen. We also do a recap blog that goes out every, I believe, Friday is when it goes out. Just kind of recaps whatever we talked about in the podcast, and in case you're not able to listen but you want to read. And yeah, we'll see you next time on the Publisher Lab.